I'm very happy now to welcome back to the program Robert Eisenstein. He is a physicist. He's founder and director of the Santa Fe Alliance for Science. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Mary Charlotte. It's a pleasure to be here, as always.
I love it that you've spent your life doing this super high-level physics, and then when you're done with all that, you start working with young people through the Santa Fe Alliance for Science.
I know it seems that way, but actually I had a long career as a university professor, and 22 years, actually. And during that whole time, I mostly taught engineering physics, and I taught it mostly to freshmen. Freshman physics. And I encountered thousands of students, I'm sure, during that time. And I really have always enjoyed science education. And it's been a big part of what I did, even when I was very active in research. I always wanted to teach and was very glad to do it. So
what's the Santa Fe Alliance for Science all about?
Well, it's an organization that attempts to help students in the Santa Fe area, both in the elementary and high school, but also in the community college, become more conversant with math and science so that they can prepare themselves not just for careers in math and science by any means, but for a broad-ranging set of careers, that those students who wish to go on to college are properly prepared to go on to college. Now, we don't bear a primary responsibility for doing this, but we are eager to help the schools and the community college with their students who are usually having a little bit of difficulty. We want to help them achieve confidence in what they do and achieve skill so that they can do what's expected of them when they get to college, if they decide to go to college. For those students who don't wish to go to college, who want a direct career track, what in my day used to be called vocational training but is not called that anymore, we want to be sure that they have the skill set that's necessary to have a job that's technically oriented but not at the research level.
I think confidence is such a big part of it. When you talk to people, when one talks to people who do have a career, let's say in research or in really any major profession, somewhere along the line, when they were a kid, they developed a sense of confidence that was real. You know, they actually were able to accomplish things, get credit for that, and then that propelled them.
That's right. And that you're touching on an essential role that family life and parents play in the upbringing of a child, of a student. The confidence that you speak of, you're absolutely right about that, comes from home, in my view, at least to large measure. If a child has internal reserves of strong confidence, and we see kids are like that all the time, quite often, that's great, but a lot of kids don't have that, and they need the reassurance of home life, they need the security of home life, they need someone looking after them when they're young, they need mentors as they go through life. I had several wonderful mentors as I was going through my career, but family life is really important. The role of the parent is critical.
You must have kids, though, when you are working with the Santa Fe Alliance for Science, who really don't have that self-confidence. And is there any way to actually develop that when it's sorely lacking in their home life?
Well, that's where schools come in. That's where effective teachers come in. That's where the community can come in, helping students by being part of their lives in a mentorship sort of role. The role of positive adults of any stripe in a child's life, I think, is really critically important. And so when people talk about, what's wrong with the schools, my feeling about that is that's a very narrow way to look at what the issues are. It's much broader than that. It's a societal issue. It's how we as a society are doing in terms of raising our children and helping them to become successful.
It's so tricky because there's so much that goes into it, and people like to... And I wonder if this comes from a kind of, almost reductionist scientific kind of analytical thinking, but it's like people want to say, what's wrong with the science programs in our schools? What's wrong with the reading and literacy programs in our schools? When actually there is a whole big problem that touches on every single part of our society.
That's right.
Including how many people are in prison, including questions of hunger and poverty, including, and which goes to taxation and all those political issues.
It's a societal thing, absolutely. In fact, I can't quote you a citation at the moment, but I've heard it said enough times, and it just makes sense to me, that the leading indicator of childhood success is family income. And whether or not you're in a family that is academically oriented or business oriented or whatever, professionally oriented in some way, the fact that the family at some level has been successful brings to the children a feeling of wanting to be successful and maybe even understanding a little bit about how one goes about doing that. And for children who don't have that, in really when poverty is the name of the game and the rule of the day, you know, when for a child, and I've seen this myself, when going to school is sort of the fifth most important thing they're doing that day, after eating, raising enough money to keep the family going, those kinds of things, it's not really a surprise that a child in that situation is going to have a hard time often.
Then, of course, there's the many, many counterexamples in immigrant children whose parents had very little money, but this real focus on education, which I have to say, you know, my dad coming from an immigrant family and all of that, you know, they did fine.
That's right. Well, I mean, they might have been a little bit thin in terms of resources, but they were very thick and heavy in terms of love and devotion to family and staying together and looking out for their kids. They did the best they could. You see examples like that today too. It's as you say, it's frequent.
But that documentary that the CCA, which I had on last week, and everybody, I'm recommending it to everybody, called Brooklyn Castle, which is about this school in Brooklyn, this junior high school in Brooklyn, which is 70% poverty level, and they produce the best chess players in the United States of America in their age group.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you ever see the movie Stand and Deliver?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that was a similar kind of thing.
I mean,
students in an impoverished Hispanic neighborhood had a nurturing and caring teacher, in this case, who really not only taught them calculus and mathematics, but he really looked after them as individuals. And you know, that story, as far as I know, is a true story.
And it's all about, it comes back to this thing, this ongoing theme, which is it's all about relationships. It's not just about testing and having teachers in there who know what they're doing, but this is what you're nurturing at the Santa Fe Alliance for Science, is actually developing relationships between, and in your case, volunteers and students.
That's right. Yeah, and we do this in two principal ways. We have an extensive tutoring program at the high school, Santa Fe High School, and at the Santa Fe Community College. And nowadays, by far, our largest tutoring effort is at the community college because the tutors like going there, since the students are so much more interested in their careers than they were when they were in high school.
Right.
So they work a lot harder, and they're much more interested in the outcome. The other major activity we have is the science fair program, where last year the Santa Fe Public Schools had science fairs at 17 out of the 20 elementary schools, I think, up from 6, I think, 5 years before.
And that's your doing. That's the Santa Fe Alliance for Science.
We played a big role, that's true.
Yeah.
And we supply the judges. But, you know, at about the same time the Alliance was founded, the school district also made a commitment to science and math by hiring Ellen Levy, who's the coordinator for math and science curriculum in the high schools and in the schools generally. And she's been the person at the school district who's been in charge of the science fairs. And working together, you know, we have built this thing. But, you know, by no means has it been entirely us. Without them, the program wouldn't exist.
So let's talk about some really interesting science projects that these young people have done. Can you give us some examples?
I'll give you two. If you only want to hear one, that's okay.
Let's hear some.
So last year, I think it was a third grader, and it was at, I'll try to remember the name of the school. I'll remember it in a minute. But anyway, this young lady, for no apparent reason, decided she was going to count how the colors were distributed in a bag of M&Ms. So she opened up a large bag of M&Ms, you know, one of these ones that has 100 or 120 M&Ms in it, and she counted up how many blues, how many reds, how many greens, etc., how many oranges. It turns out there were 25% more orange ones in the bag than there were any other color. So she said, that's a little odd. what happens in the second bag. So to make a long story short, she opened in the end 5 or 6 bags of M&Ms, and she found the same result. Namely, in each bag, there were sort of 25 to 30% more orange ones than other colored, and the other colors were all about the same. So then she realizes, well, this is not an accident. I mean, they're doing this on purpose. And a little bit of research on the web, she discovered that orange is apparently a very alluring color when it comes to food. And so M&M's company did this quite consciously to make M&M's a more attractive thing to eat. So
amazing.
So you say, well, okay, what use is that? The use of that is that this child was curious enough to follow up on what was a zany idea at the beginning, but which in the end turned out to be pretty interesting.
And we hope that she shared them and did not eat all those 4 zillion bags of M&Ms by herself.
I can't speak to that. But all I know is she was there that day. She wasn't ill at home or anything like that. So.
Well, and it also points to the reality that there are so many science projects in your daily life available close at hand that you might not see that way until you have the eyes to see.
Right. That's right. Exactly. So, you know, that was just a wonderful example of serendipity, and then the fact that this child was alert enough to realize that there might be something there, and she followed up on it.
What's another one?
So the other one I would mention, and this one was done by a young lady at El Dorado School. She decided to do a test and see whether the 12 or so chickens that her family owned, whether chickens were could be taught to recognize color. So she got a big box.
So she gave them some M&Ms.
She got a big box. She cut 4 holes in it. She painted one side red, one side blue, one side green, whatever. And she put food behind one of the colors. I even now forget which one it was. But she had them eat out of that hole in the box, that color, for 10 or 12 days. And then she then took the food away, and the chickens came out and immediately went again to the blue one, even though the food had been placed behind one of the other colors. So the first thing they did was to go look at the blue one to see whether. So she extended that experiment a little bit.
Then did she change the position of the
walls? She changed the position. She tested for things that, you know, whether they were just, for example, as you say, just going to the same location on the box each time, that kind of thing. And she got this really beautiful result. Chickens can tell color.
Very interesting.
Very interesting. And I can't remember what year she was, 4th grade or 5th grade. Don't remember that, unfortunately. And
again, you don't need any fancy equipment.
No,
it's right there.
But then again, in both of these instances, they had very supportive parents who helped you know, do things like go out and buy bags of M&Ms and follow up on the experiment, or, you know, build this little box. In this particular case, I know a little bit about the family. I won't go into details, but the dad is good with his hands and is a carpenter, and he helped his daughter make this box, and so that's how it goes, you know. You and that builds confidence, you know. That
exactly.
You have a good idea, and you follow up, and you have somebody who's willing to support you, even when you don't know what the outcome is going to be.
Right.
So that's nice. I think that's really great.
We're talking to Robert Eisenstein of the Santa Fe Alliance for Science. Now, you rely very much on the volunteers. Who are these folks, and what do they do?
Okay, so at the moment we have about 100 people signed up as on our active volunteer list, and they do the judging at the science fairs I just mentioned. And by the way, this is no small job. There were 17 schools last year that had science fairs. We had a fair every single day in February, every single school day, between 70 and 100, at least between 70 and 100 projects at each of these places. So we needed, in the end, over 40 judges to carry out all this work. These people are male and female. They're young, but mostly older. Many of them are retired.
Are they retired science teachers a lot of the time?
Most of them are retired researchers, but some of them are retired from other tasks in life. I mean, we have mathematicians, we have computer scientists, that kind of thing. The one thing I would say about them is they're really interested in what they're doing. They're not mailing it in by any means. They're really participating, and they're very active with these kids, and very supportive of the program, and they are totally reliable. When they say they're going to do something, they do it. And, you know, we don't have to go around at the last minute looking for judges because people didn't show up. That does not happen.
Right.
Or if it does happen, it's for a good reason.
Now, are you always looking for new volunteers?
Always looking for new volunteers. People come, people go, people move, people decide to do something else. You know, it's a rotating thing. We've had about 160 people through the program since the beginning.
What are the qualifications that you have to have?
Well, they have to have some knowledge of science. But, you know, when you think about, I mean, I'm a physicist, and most of the projects I see when I go through a science fair are not about physics. They're usually about biology or environmental issues or climate
perception.
Change. Yeah, all kinds of things. So the thing you really have to know is how to ask questions about science. So tell me about your idea. Why do you think it's a good one? What did you do to test your idea? Show me your data. Why do you think your data support or refute your conclusion? And those kinds of questions you can learn to do in a very general way. You don't have to be, and it's good for me, you don't have to know in biology in depth in order to be, because I don't. You don't have to know biology in depth to be able to interview a kid about his or her biology project. So
what does the Santa Fe Alliance for Science have coming up in the new year?
Well, right now we're in a quiescent mode, in a sense. We do these two things I mentioned, the tutoring and the science fair judging. We also have the Science Cafe series.
Right, which we feature on the show.
Which we feature on the show. I think you've had almost every single one. Just about every one, and there are 40 of them by now, so it's not a small number. But that's not really a role for our volunteers, because issue an invitation to a speaker. The speaker shows up. There are a few people who manage the cafe series, but it doesn't really involve a big volunteer involvement. But anyway, it's been quite a successful program. Our average attendance is between 60 and 65 every time. And
I love it.
At first I was not so sure this was a good idea, but now we have somewhere between 30 and 40% adults and the rest students. And at first I was a little bit nervous about that. I wanted this to be for students. But then I realized, you know, these kids are interacting with adults. They're all in a room together. They're asking questions together. They're learning about each other in some little way, you know. And I think it's very positive. So if adults want to come, we're glad to have them. In fact, we hope they do come.
Well, if we're going to put it on the radio, they better be welcome, because
we
have a lot of adult listeners as well as young people.
Absolutely.
And I think it's important, as you say, for people to have really intergenerational communication and relationships and be comfortable with each other and not just with other seventh graders or whatever they are.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So those are our principal activities. We also have an activity of professional enrichment for teachers that teachers are invited to come. We're going to start again next semester. We'll have four events, and it's going to be entirely about energy and the environment, and we're having two distinguished Los Alamos scientists present those four lectures.
Excellent.
And it's, first of all, where does energy come from? How is energy used? What is the impact on the environment? What alternatives do we have for new energy sources? Those kinds of questions are going to be examined. We hope we have a lot of teachers attending. We'll see.
Robert Eisenstein is founder and director of the Santa Fe Alliance for Science, and Santa Fe Alliance for Science can be found on the web at sfafs.org. And anybody can write to them, and new volunteers always
That's
welcome.
Right. We're always welcome, looking for volunteers. In closing, I guess I want to also tip my hat to the public schools, because without their participation, the Alliance wouldn't exist. We've had a very healthy partnership now for coming on 8 years. It'll be 8 years in May. We had a very good relationship, first with Leslie Carpenter, then with Bobby Gutierrez, and now with Joel Boyd, and with many teachers throughout the district. And, you know, I just can't say enough about how all that's worked. So I want to thank them.
Excellent. And thank you for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It's a pleasure, Mary Charlotte.